Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, your guide to better cricket. It doesn't matter who you are or where you are, we're here for half an hour or so to help you out. And who are we? Well, slightly unusually this week, there is three of us on the show, but one of the three is pre-recorded. So my name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things. And joining me live on the line, recording live on the line, is one of the regular hosts. It's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavis.
Hello there, David. Just the two of us at the moment, but we'll be seamlessly linking in with Mr. Garraway as well, I'm sure.
That's right. Yes, of course, the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School, Mark Garraway, will be answering the questions later in the show. And then we will, as if by magic, make him appear like the shopkeeper from Mr. Ben. There's a reference for you, Lavers.
does that one kind of work worldwide?
Yeah, I don't know how many people are just scratching their head and going, what are you talking about? Well, YouTube is your friend. But yeah, back to the cricket. Stay tuned. If you're a fan of Garrett, he will be on the show a little bit later on. But right now, Lavers, it's you and me. And so we're going to have a little bit of a chat about bowling, injury prevention in bowling, and the debate which has gone on for quite a while now, which is this idea of over-bowling bowlers and, or versus, I should say, getting overs under the belt. You know, because that's a classic conflict, isn't it? For years I've heard this complaint from club captains and coaches and people like that saying, well, you know, we've got this kid, he's a really good player, and then, you know, he's opening the bowling for our first team, and then I have to take him off after seven overs because this stupid injury prevention rule, which he's fine, there's nothing wrong with him, and just let him bowl like I did. I bowled 25 overs up the hill into the wind every week, there's no problem. I'm exaggerating for effect, but you get the point, Lavers. Now, what I wanted to talk with you about was where you stand on this kind of area of conflict between the directives of how many overs a bowler who's under 19, isn't it, can bowl in matches and in games, and then how to make sure that they get enough bowling to get their match fitness up, to improve their skills, and to deal with those shorter bowling spells. So what do you think?
Well, it's that classic trade-off of quality and quantity, isn't it? And obviously the quantity is limited, so we've really got to hone in on making sure the quality of what we do in training, so that the every ball that bowled is bowled with intent, and everything that is discussed is really, really relevant to the individual. And I think it challenges us as coaches. It makes us really consider if we want someone to bowl an over and they've only got five overs in a spell that they're allowed to bowl, for instance, in a practice session, then every ball has got to be thought out. We've got to make sure we're giving them a real clear direction as to how we want them to bowl that ball, or how we want to agree upon how that ball is going to be bowled. And that might be that if there are technical changes we're looking to make, it might be completely unrelated in the spectrum when we're looking for a bit of just a bit of an outcome or a bit of a feel of how we're actually bowling. But it does really place a lot of stress on thinking through how we're going to go about it. And it's not done. ECB don't spend lots of money and lots of time thinking about these things for no reason, do they? They really do consider it carefully. And what they're wanting to do is make sure that those who are bowling and are playing at a good level of cricket, who often get pulled from pillar to post, they'll be playing, as we mentioned slightly before we got on air, where they'll be playing club cricket, they'll be playing school cricket, they'll be playing county cricket, they'll be playing senior cricket, they'll have lots of things going on, and making sure that they're managed appropriately is really key. That argument that you said of the guy saying, I bowled 20 overs into the wind uphill for the last 20 years and I'm fine. Yeah, that's one argument, isn't it? But you say you're fine, but equally you're opening the bowling with a 14-year-old boy, so it suggests that maybe you're not potentially at the level that maybe you could have reached if you'd have been managed a little bit better. And it might be that, yes, you're fine for that level, but this player's ambition is to play at a higher level and is to go beyond that. And if it is, sometimes it does need a bit of careful management, and that can be from the physical angle, first of all, which is the primary reason for it, is that we want to make sure that people aren't doing too many things too often that's going to put place so much stress on their body. But also it works quite well from a kind of interest level and excitement level of bowling, where if someone does bowl 4, 5, 6 days a week and they bowl 10, 15 overs at a time, for a lot of them it can get quite tedious, and you can understand that some people drift out of the game because the quality of what they're doing maybe is slipping a little bit. They are suffering the odd niggle from injury, but also there's not a lot of purpose to what they're doing because there's just a long slog of overs and overs and overs and overs. So it can help from the interest point of view and the excitement and the willingness to be involved, which for so many young cricketers these days is under pressure from other opportunities in life, that it can work in the favour from that angle as well.
Yeah, it's the argument that why should I take him off if he's bowling well is, to me anyway, comes from this idea that you say you're the captain, you feel that you want to win that game of cricket, and you also feel that kid, you know, might never go on to be a professional or an international cricketer. So why should you, as someone who's trying to win that game of cricket, trying to win the league for your team on that season, why should you care about what the ECB want to do in their ivory tower from aspiring bowlers who are playing at who are going to be playing at the highest level? Why should I care about that? That's kind of, so to me it's a slight, I understand it, but it's also a slightly selfish point of view, isn't it, in that you're only thinking about the immediate and you're not thinking about, well, hang on a minute, this is a restriction that's been put into place for a reason. It's not just a reason that is some ivory tower reason. It's been well thought about. So I do feel like it's a reasonable thing to say, you know, let's take a bowler off after a set amount of time, because we know on balance most bowlers will do better if they bowl less than if they bowl over those limits.
Yeah, I'd also say be prepared for this young guy to bowl really well. Don't let him, if he's allowed a 7-over spell, so your average 16, 17-year-old is allowed a 7-over spell at a time, I think it is at the moment. And if they do bowl well and they beat the edge or they take an edge or whatever, and then after 3 or 4 overs you bring in that second slip, that third slip, because the chances are being created, then when maybe you as a captain can rethink your strategy a little bit and actually be quicker to move on bringing in that extra catcher if they're looking like a match winner and taking advantage of the fact that they're bowling well, rather than reacting after it's happened and then wanting another 2 overs at the end because you maybe haven't had the field in place or the strategy or the confidence in asking to bowl a particular line or length a little bit earlier on. So I guess it all comes down to, if we could know every bowler individually and we could know what their physical makeup was, how their spine was formed, how their technique worked with their physical mechanics and how much stress that placed on their body, then we could no doubt say to certain boys or girls who are 14, 15 years old, actually, you're fine to bowl 10, 12, 13 overs in a row. And there will be people who could withstand that, I'm sure. Equally, there'll be others who really...
You get outliers at both ends, don't you? You get outliers.
Exactly. You know, you're going to get plenty of outliers. But what we've got to... All we can do is say, what's going to protect everyone? And what they're trying to do is protect as many people as possible in this instance. And obviously, this doesn't even protect anyone, because we know what Tamil Mills is like. He really struggles when he goes beyond that. So he's someone with a slightly narrower spine structure, and it doesn't... The muscle he's got around that doesn't have as much, I think it hasn't got as much attachment opportunity, so it's not as strong as it would like to be, and so it presumably fatigues a little bit more quickly, and he struggles with issues because of that. He's I guess he's probably 25, 26 year old guy now. So thinking about this, it's what we're trying to do, and look after as many people as possible. Yes, we're not necessarily going to help a specific cricket club win a game of cricket, But again, if the laws are set out, or the rules are set out at the start of the game, the start of the season, whenever it might be, then we know the constraints we're under. We've got to play with them. And we're doing it for the greater good, which is looking after those guys who are wanting to play from the age of 10 years old through to the age of 40 years old, hopefully, rather than having them pull up with an injury at 23, 24 and missing out on 15 years of cricket, which would be a great shame.
And really, how good, with that greater good in mind, then to say, well, hang on a minute, if he'd have bowled two more overs there, you know, we could be champions. If you're relying on a 16-year-old to bowl you 10 overs straight through to win you games, then maybe it's time to rethink your tactics, because that's not something that you're going to be able to maintain, is it?
Absolutely, and maybe can we work with those guys that aren't of that age and who are allowed to bowl a full set of 10 at a time, and maybe see if there's a bit of room for opportunity. Can those guys improve to have more of a match-winning contribution as well? I think sometimes within club cricket, it is all about the young guys getting better, and they're the ones that actually get a lot of focus from the coaches, and then the senior guys often don't get as much coaching and become quite stagnant or quite stale. But they're the ones that are allowed to bowl as many overs as they want within the kind of framework of the league. So perhaps rather than complaining about the young guys not being able to make the contribution they want, can we get more out of those guys who aren't restricted by the number of overs they can bowl in a spell, or days in a week, or whatever it might be?
And that actually brings us nicely on to wrapping up with a piece of news from Pitch Vision, which we've just introduced a tool on the Pitch Vision app and also on pitchvision.com that allows you to manage your workload as a bowler or a coach of bowlers. It's called the Pitch Vision Workload Manager, and it allows you to set the number of balls that you want to bowl in any given period and then track over time to see if you are meeting those goals, staying underneath those goals, or exceeding them a lot of the time. And by doing that, being able to see that at a glance, you can then very quickly make the changes that you need to make as you go along. So if you are a bowler, or you're a coach of bowlers who bowl a lot, then make sure you head over to pitchvision.com to check out the Workload Manager. And now it's time for us to answer a couple of questions that have been sent into the show. And the way this works is we answer the questions from listeners or readers of pitchvision.com, and then we choose a winner. And that winner gets a prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send your questions into us for future shows by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, or you can get in touch with us via social media, which we'll tell you about towards the end of the show. But it's all the usual things to give you a hint. Of course, Gareth is going to be chipping in here, so stand by your beds for that. But we'll start with a question from Cameron. And Cameron says, how do guys like Virat Kohli, who are so bottom hand dominant, drive the ball so well without hitting it up in the air? Do they lighten their bottom hand grip when driving the ball?
So different batsmen will work in different ways, and you can all picture the guy that allows the ball to travel really nicely and come alongside him, and others like to play the ball from out in front. So I think having an understanding of what type of cricketer you are and where good contact comes from you is really, really useful. Obviously, we talk about being bottom hand dominant or top hand dominant or whatever it might be, and it would be there will be a difference in the way the bat swings, but what we're looking for really is as much of a hitting zone as possible, and that hitting zone is the length of the point of the length of area under which the point of contact will work really, really well, which I'm sure Gareth will talk about as well. So if you imagine you're looking at a batsman from the side, so you're stood at backward point, you're in a great position to see that hitting zone, and we're looking for how long is that bat in a good position, or in a position that would suit making contact with the ball. And the longer that hitting zone is, the better chance you've got of timing the ball effectively. Now, that can often come from working with your arms a lot more than your hands. So if you do get a really good extension of your arms, then that hitting zone often works quite well and can still be really good as you go and make contact out in front of that front leg. So even if you are a bit bottom hand dominant, if your arms are working well and you are getting some extension, even if your predominant grip is with the bottom hand, you'll probably find you're still just about able to keep the ball on the floor. Obviously, if you really let the ball travel and you're one of those guys that lets it come alongside you, almost underneath you before you make contact, then you'll probably find that you don't have so many problems. Again, we can go back to our batting types and whether we're the sort of person who likes to be quite squatted and quite wide, or the person that naturally leans into the ball. Now, that person who leans into the ball is going to play it from underneath them a little bit more and they're going to be head over the ball, whereas the person who plays it from starts from that slightly wider stance is probably going to play the ball from just in front of them. So we're all slightly different in the way we go about doing it. The key isn't one will work and one won't work. The key is understanding which way works for us. So yes, Virat Kohli, excellent role model, excellent person for someone to try and mirror, but really only an excellent person to copy if you're that type of mover, you're that type of batsman, which fits into the same framework as him or an Ian Bell or those kind of guys who very much lead with the head first, get their body weight into a ball and because of that can probably play the ball quite late and be quite bottom hand dominant if that's the way they pick up the ball. And because of that, he's actually incredibly good with those wrists, isn't he? And he can work the ball from offside into leg side right at the last second with that power in the bottom hand. So potentially for some they might see it as a weakness, but for Virat Kohli, as with so much of the things he does, he turns it into a strength.
Yeah, it's a bit of you know, the bottom hand gets a bit of a bad rap, doesn't it? It's kind of people are saying, oh, he's bottom handed, because there when someone uses their bottom, if you're right-handed batsman, if you use your right hand, it's very obvious when something goes wrong. You know, the ball goes into the leg side, you close the face of the bat on the ball, you play across the line, or you have that funny looking scoop where you just hit the ball to extra cover and you think, oh dear. And that was but often it's a matter of timing more than it is a matter of the bottom hand doing something wrong. It's not like you should not have any bottom hand in any of your shots, because the bottom hand provides a lot of very important aspects to your batting, even with a straight bat. So to be able to think to yourself, well, top hand good, bottom hand bad, is a bit oversimplistic. Actually, it's both hands working together, and it's just how you get to that into that hitting zone and hit that ball downwards that makes the difference, rather than thinking if I'm dominant with my bottom hand, I'm going to have to hit the ball in the air because it's impossible to do anything else. That isn't the case. I think that's not a great language to use, even by saying bottom hand dominant. I know what people mean, but I think that's not great language to use. I think it's just, you know, I think it's a matter of talking about timing and saying have the hands work together. You know, don't worry about dominance. The hands work together, and if you can work that out, if you work from there, then you're not worrying about doing something wrong with the bottom hand.
The interesting thing would be how that I can't remember if it was a study or if it was just an observation of international cricketers, and how those who use their stronger hand as the top hand, so those who are naturally right-handed but bat left-handed, etc., there's a much higher percentage playing at international level than those who use the perhaps more conventionally understood stronger hand going at the bottom. Now, that's, I think it came out, it was an article about probably 3 months ago, something like 3 or 4 months ago. Whether there'll be any follow-up from that and whether that becomes part of the way that cricket is taught at a very young level, that actually a right-handed person is a left-handed batter, I'm not sure. I think it will still come down to the natural way that someone picks a bat up when they're very young, and often it's done way before there's any consideration of playing competitively or playing obviously playing at a professional level or anything like that. So it's very much established in those learning phases of development, of enjoyment, of liking a ball sport at its absolute most simplistic level. But perhaps there will be some consideration for that in the future, and we should be thinking about which way we try and encourage young cricketers to pick up a bat, which could be the opposite of what's probably been done for the last 40 or 50 years, I would have thought.
Yeah, that's an interesting area, isn't it? And I think, you know, there's nothing wrong. Years ago, you know, I heard of a coach who was encouraging very, very young players to, you know, bat both ways round, you know, just try it both ways. Like, until you're used to cricket, it doesn't matter which way round you are, does it? I mean, it's just one way or the other, you know. You just try them both, and probably, you know, you give an 8-year-old or a 6-year-old a cricket bat and tell them to hold it, and they hold it naturally right-handed, and they try and hit the ball, and they miss a couple, and they hit a couple. And then you tell them to say, all right, try standing the other way around, and they try and they miss a couple and hit a couple. What difference does it make to them? So if you learn both, even if you just try both, then that would be an interesting thing to sort of integrate into when you're working with very young people, you know, to try throwing, batting, bowling with both. I mean, you might as well.
Absolutely. Well, it's still going. I saw a close friend of the show, Nick Pothas, who is now working as fielding coach with the Sri Lankan side. He posted on Facebook the other day, one of the guys who I think was one of the under-19s, bowling right arm and left arm, which, as we've seen before, definitely in under 19 cricket internationally, and I'm sure there's a few guys floating around at first class level who can do that, predominantly spinners, but yeah, there are people out there who have continued to teach themselves to do both skills, and I'm sure it's to their advantage that now they've been through a lot of hard work and come out the other side, it's presumably to their advantage that they can do that, and it's got to be useful for...
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily recommend a, you know, like a 16-year-old guy who's embedded in the game making that change as much as saying, well, you know, try it with kids who are just starting out.
And I think we're probably a little bit soon to close them off and push them into right-handed or left-handed, because I imagine it probably happens in a matter of weeks and months with people at an early age. But if maybe they can continue for a few years trying a bit of both, then especially with the skills coming into batting where reverse sweeps and switch hits are such a big part of the game, then having that early education and hitting in a different way or the opposite way around is only going to be more useful for those skills.
Okay, let's see what Gareth has to say about it.
It's interesting when you say, you know, Virat Kohli is so bottom hand dominant. Is it that he's gripping the bat harder? Is it that his batting grip is slightly different to the model that you have in your head, Cameron? Is it that he's using his bottom hand to steer the ball rather than to add power, which I suppose is the conventional way that we've always looked at it? Is it the top hand steers the bat face and the bottom hand adds the power? Well, with some people that isn't true. It actually works in reverse, that one, so that the power is generated with the top hand and the bottom hand is the thing that steers it. And somebody that I work with, Kevin Peterson, was exactly like that. And I think when we think back to the way that KP used to bat, we can all sort of visualise the way that you'd take a ball from outside off stump and he'd manoeuvre it by using that bottom hand as well as his leverage and his long limbs to be able to take that ball and control it through the leg side. So how do these players do it and keep the ball on the ground? So, another good question. Well, it's an awareness thing, really. So they understand how their hands work and which hand does what. But also their contact points are very much under control. And most players make contact with the ball quite late. And if you make contact with the ball quite late, then the bat face, the angle of a bat face is going to take the ball into the ground. But with somebody like KP, he's actually accessing the ball a little bit earlier than most players, but still able to hit it on the ground. So it's an awareness thing, really. One of the best ways of building up awareness is through what are known as Inver drills. And John Inverarity, he was Warwickshire coach and then head of selectors for Australia, over the past 5 years or so before Rob Marsh then took over that position. He came up with loads of drills a number of years ago, which basically involved a ball being rolled or bobbled to you, and you hit the ball with one hand. So you put the bat in the top hand and hit it, then you put the bat in the bottom hand and you hit it, and you'll work out then which one of your hands is the power one and which one of your hands is the steerer, the manoeuvre of the bat face, the thing that steers that bat face and takes that ball away on the direction, the intended direction. So you'll work that one out. And also from there, probably with the bobble feed more than roll feed, is you'll work out where your contact points are in order to keep control of that ball, just like a Virat Kohli does. But back in my day with England, a Kevin Peterson would do in a slightly different way to what we had in our heads as a technical model. So, Cameron, that's a really good drill to do. Inver drills, if you can get on the internet, have a look at those. There's a few kicking around on the old search engines, of video search engines. Well worth a look at.
Next question is from Ganeith. And Ganeith says, I am a 17-year-old from India. I used to bowl fast and furious. I had pace, nip and swing. But I had a year's gap. And now I just have line length, no pace, no appreciable swing. Fat got deposited on my waist a bit. How do I get thin and get my bowling back? So this is not a the Biggest Loser podcast, but I'm sure we can give him some advice, can't we, Lavis?
Oh yeah, get playing again first of all. As much activity, running around and doing as much as you can first of all is always a great starting point for losing a little bit of weight. So I would recommend that you don't give in to, I'm a bit behind people. I'm used to being one of the better players, and now I'm gone behind. You're at that critical development age there of 15, 16, 17, where everyone is accelerating pretty quickly in their development. So a year out of that stage might see you drop from being a bit in front to a little bit behind, but you've still got the opportunity to get back in. Leave it another 2 or 3 years and it'll become harder and harder to re-establish yourself at the level you want. So first of all, get back on with playing the game. Obviously, the fitness side of things will depend on how much time you have available and how you can commit to what you're trying to do. But as a bowler, you've got to try and look after those core things. So your core strength and that trunk strength is going to be really important for you as a bowler. So in terms of injury prevention, first of all, make sure that we do plenty of work on that. And then that lower body strength, upper body power combination, really useful. So it's just making a routine, I think, to start with. So without even considering the final outcome of wanting to bowl 70, 75, 80 miles an hour, whatever it might be, in terms of losing the weight, make sure we've got some regular cardio or sprint work or something that's going to get you moving around and get you feeling a little bit lighter on your feet again, first of all. A little bit of weight training in there is going to be really useful for raising that metabolism, burning a bit of fat. So big compound movements like deadlifts and squats and those kind of things, pull-ups, bench press, those kind of things are going to work multiple muscles at the same time, stimulate lots of muscle growth, hopefully get some fat being burnt there. Once you've got through that little bit, think about your diet, because diet's always going to override everything else. You can try really hard with those weights, really hard on that cardio. If you work on the diet will outweigh the other things almost every single time. So if we can get a balance where we're working hard on all three facets there of strength, endurance and working with a diet, they're your really good starting points. Then you can start worrying about streamlining it into bowling fast afterwards. Get out there, get bowling again, get enjoying the game. Be patient with yourself, because it's not going to happen in 2 weeks. It's probably going to take a little bit longer than that. Someone who could have been lost from the game by the sound of it, right back in, which is where we want him.
Yeah, I can only echo that. I take it back a step even further and say, have a look at the way that you think about this as well. I mean, it clearly, the fact that you've sent in a question says that you're feeling some anxiety about this, right? You're concerned in some way, and what that might suggest is that you're worried that you are no longer proving yourself. You know, it's almost an ego thing. It's like, well, I'm not as good as I was, And if I go and try and be as good as I was and fail at that, then I'm a failure. I'm not a good player. So that's kind of that's a way of thinking at it that's kind of restricting yourself and preventing yourself from getting to where you want to be by closing off doors. But if you take a different approach and say to yourself, this is where I am, this is where I want to go to, if I want to focus on improving rather than proving, then I'm going to very quickly not only get back to where I was, but go beyond where I was and much further, because my focus is on improving rather than trying to get back to where I was to prove that I haven't lost it. You know, I haven't lost my talent that I had originally. Because if you focus on that other side, then it just leads to stress and anxiety and not pushing yourself forwards. But if you try and push yourself forwards, you follow the advice that Lavers has offered to you and forget about trying to prove yourself, then I feel like that will help you stick to it and it will lead to much faster and much greater success. So that would be what I would add to your comments, Lavers. You had the practical one, I had the philosophical one there, I think.
Excellent, good combination. And Gareth is no doubt have the right one.
Let's have a listen to what Gareth has to say.
Ganeev, great to have you back bowling. And yeah, I'm sure you're a little bit frustrated about the fact that you were fast and furious, that you had nip and pace and swing, but now you've turned into more of a line and length bowler. It could be that you've stumbled across the main reason, which was during that period of non-bowling activity that you picked up a bit of excess body weight. I think we can all relate to that. But given your age, you're in a position to be able to do something about it. Now, these things happen through either having the same diet with a period of inactivity or lesser activity, and then obviously by replacing that inactivity with some activity, you will get yourself back to where you were before. Or it could be that actually you picked up some not so good eating habits during that time as well, and a lot of people make poor dietary decisions without even thinking about it. It's not a conscious effort. So one of the best ways to work out what you're eating and whether you have changed your routines around food is to actually write everything down, and you can do that either in a book, and people have kept food diaries for years, or nowadays you can do that on your phone, can't you, with quite a few of these food management apps that are available. You know, both ways are really good, and what they'll do is they'll start to build up an awareness of what actually you're putting into your system, what time of day you're eating, for example, and it'll just build that awareness, and then you can make some informed decisions about the type of food that you put into yourself, how much food you feed yourself, and all of a sudden you'll probably find that you shift a bit of that weight and that your movements become more efficient because your body's not having to shift quite so much timber around with it. And as a result, there should be a knock-on effect at your age that you'll get back to bowling fast and furious. Of course, the other thing is that you might have grown as well during that that time. And whilst 17 is probably a little bit older than most, we've got a number of players at the moment, a couple of years younger than you, that are going through significant growth spurts. And as a result, their pace has dropped off. So even though they're in good physical condition, even though they're doing quite a lot of bowling and quite a lot of drilling, because their limb length is changing, their timing of their bowling actions, their coordination has been impacted negatively for a little bit. But the good news about that is that we can track where they are within their growth, and they will come out the other side. You know, they will slow their growth, and all of a sudden their coordination patterns will come back in as well, and things will start to align themselves. And we've actually seen one bowler come out of that growth spurt now and has put on 4 miles an hour in next to no time, not as a result of the programs, not as a result of strength, but just the fact that now his sequencing is much better as a result of being that bit more coordinated. So there can be a load of reasons, but I think a really good starting point will be to log your exercise, log your bowling overs, log your food, and see what patterns that you can identify, and if there's any changes that you can build in after reviewing that information.
And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. Slightly unusual one, but we got through it and hopefully helped a few people along the way. Before we go, we need to decide on a winner of this week's competition. And so, Lavers, you're in the chair this week, and the two questions on offer were Cameron's question about bottom hand dominance while driving and Ganeet's question about getting thin and getting his bowling back. So which one did you prefer this week?
I'm going to go with Cameron's question about the grip, about that bottom hand dominance. I think it was a really good discussion that we had there, and hopefully it sounds like something that's relative to him that he can start to use and apply to his game, and start thinking about how he's going to wait for the ball and still use that bottom hand effectively rather than being afraid of it.
Fantastic. Congratulations to you, Cameron, and you can get your online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. Just get in touch with us for that. Now, Lavers, if someone was listening to the show and wanted to send in their question and have their chance to win the prize, how could they get in touch with us?
Well, they can drop us an email via coach@pitchvision.com, or they can give us a ring on 0203 239 7543.
That's right. As I mentioned before, social media is available to get in touch with us as well. Facebook is one way, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. You can contact us through the social media tools on the pitchvision.com website. If you are signed up there, it's free, so you've got no reason not to head over there and start following us there. And you can also get us on Twitter at pitchvisionacad if your question is less than 140 characters. If you want to listen to the show every week, you can do so by subscribing for free. Go to your favorite podcast catching app and do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and then tap on the subscribe button. You can do that. Or you can head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link. And you get all the old shows in there, details of show notes, and lots of other fun stuff, including streaming the show straight onto your device. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, David.